The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 930. It's the 22nd of November, 2017. On the podcast today, I have George Roach, CEO of Premier African Minerals. That's PREM ticker. And George discusses their recent fundraise and the Zulu Lithium scoping study results. Plus, I also have Keith Alone, CEO of Powerhouse Energy, PHE, and Keith discusses their first major milestone in the engineering design of its distributed modular gasification system. Also on the podcast, John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talks about the hot commodities that should benefit from this electric vehicle revolution we're seeing at the moment. And as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is George Roach, CEO of Premier African Minerals. That's PREM ticker. George, thanks for joining me.
Yes, good morning, and thanks very much indeed. Good to talk to you.
Now, you've had a busy last couple of days as far as Premier African Minerals is concerned. You've had quite a few news releases out, and we'll get to those in a bit. Before we do, George, as always, for people listening to the podcast who are maybe not aware of the story of Premier, summarise the business, if you could, please.
Well, in terms of where Premier is and where Premier is going, we have a very exciting lithium and tantalum project at Zulu in Zimbabwe that's advanced scoping study just recently released. Our RHA tungsten mine in Zimbabwe is coming back into production at the moment, and we are very bullish in terms of the overall situation, both with our entities and developments in Zimbabwe.
Yeah, okay, and you've raised some money as far as the Zulu project is concerned. You raised some money via primary bid. I mean, you set out to raise $500,000, but I think you raised more than that, didn't you?
Yes, we decided that we'd raise a little just so that we had a little more latitude to continue with the work that we were doing at Premier at Zulu, and at the same time allow us to further the negotiations that are ongoing. I've said on a number of occasions that we have people who've shown strong interest in Zulu. We expect that now that the scoping study is out that we'll be able to further those, but they do take time. And I didn't want to lose any of the momentum. What was interesting about the raise is that we felt that it should be a small raise at $500,000. We were significantly oversubscribed in a very short period of time and closed that off early. And I'm deeply appreciative of the confidence that has been shown by our shareholders and our investors. And I hope that the positive movement in our share price this morning has justified that as well.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's go to the scoping study, George, and what has that revealed? Tell us all about that, please, for Zulu.
Well, there are two options that we looked at. We looked at a simple concentrate plant, just doing a concentrate at the mine site and exporting the spodumene and petalite concentrates. Mm-hmm. And we also looked at the chemical plant option, doing a lithium carbonate. Now, the interesting thing is that the location of Zulu is fairly close to the city of Bulawayo. There is a concept in Zimbabwe that is concerned with special economic zones and ownership of projects within special economic zones is negotiably different to ownership of other projects elsewhere. So it seemed sensible to us that we should look to do a concentrate, which is what most people with hard rock lithium pegmatites are doing. But that because of the favorable environment and the ability to build within the special economic zone, that we should look at the lithium carbonate option as well. It's also interesting that there are at the moment three substantial lithium pegmatite projects on the go in Zimbabwe. It seems to me that Zimbabwe is going to lead the way in terms of Africa when it comes to lithium concentrate, spodumene and petalite, and also with the eventual establishment of one or more lithium carbonate plants. So that's quite exciting. The economics of the scoping study are very satisfactory. In particular, in the production of concentrates, our ratio of spodumene to petalite, and the spodumene is the higher value item, is I think it's about 75-78% spodumene to petalite. Now that's better than some of the others in Zimbabwe, and it's a very good ratio. The other thing that is good about it is that our recoveries and our concentrate grade that was predicted from the metallurgical test work done by Angerplan in Germany indicated a greater than 6% contained lithium in our spodumene, and also indicated that the level of quartz infusion was less. Allied to that, petalite is a strong demand for petalite. It's an industrial mineral as much as a lithium bearing mineral. And our petalite is particularly low iron content. So that's a desirable commodity, even if not for lithium production, but just as a straight industrial mineral. So we're very pleased. We're very pleased with the metallurgical test results when they came out, and this has shown up in the scoping study.
Excellent stuff. And so what is next here then, George?
Well, next is that we'll continue the work that we are doing at Zulu, which is focused always on a better understanding of the resource and upgrading of the resource, preparing and looking at a bigger bulk sample for further processing, evaluation, and for improvement within the flow sheet. And simultaneous with that, now engaged very strongly in some of the discussions that are ongoing and some of the approaches that have been made to us. We always felt that we wanted to get the scoping study out so that we had a value dynamic to associate with the project, and that would put us in a fairer position to look to the negotiations in the future.
Excellent stuff. And you know, now you're here, George, it'd be remiss of me not to ask. I mean, the changes that are happening there in Zimbabwe, I mean, do you see that having a positive or negative effect on business there?
Look, I think it's important that we have always complied with whatever it is that has been necessary to operate in Zimbabwe. We have a good relationship with the Indigenisation Economic Empowerment Board. We have a good relationship between the communities around us. We believe we've been good citizens. I am confident that the Zimbabwean situation will settle down, and I'm confident that the future is good. I expect that the economic environment in Zimbabwe is going to improve such that it attracts much more foreign direct investment, and with a strong move to try and reposition Zimbabwe back into the world economic systems and so on. So I think that the future is good, and I think that supporting that is the fact that the changes that appear to be happening in Zimbabwe are being done peacefully. and are being done with due regard to law and their constitution. So I'm encouraged. Our operations continue. We've seen no reason to change anything, stop anything, do anything different.
Excellent stuff. Okay, George, well, if someone's listening to this right now and like the sound of what you're doing and the results from the scoping study, but are not yet following the story on Vox Markets, could you give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, please?
Absolutely. It starts with the developments at RHA Tungsten, long-standing tungsten project going back into production at the moment, and an update expected pretty soon on that. Coming back to Zulu, the further value adding in terms of resource development of Zulu, and the anticipated outcomes of corporate discussions that we are involved in regard to the project.
Excellent stuff. George, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
A pleasure indeed. Thank you very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Keith Alorn, CEO of Powerhouse Energy. That's PHE ticker. Keith, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Justin. It's great to be back here on Vox.
Yeah, well, you've got another seemingly milestone you've achieved today, and we'll go through the details of that in a bit. Before you do, for people not aware of the story, Keith, give them a summary of the business, please.
Absolutely. So Powerhouse Energy Group is really the UK's waste-to-hydrogen pioneer. We've been in the waste-to-energy market for a number of years, and what we've recognized is that our cutting-edge, ultra-high-temperature gasification process allows us to generate a synthesis gas from which we can extract a stream of 99.999% pure hydrogen and use that hydrogen as road fuel. The significance of that, and I think that a number of listeners kind of lost track of the significance of that, but that really allows us to become a cornerstone to the burgeoning hydrogen economy.
Yeah. And well, some people will say, surely now electric vehicles are the way forward, and they're arguing that hydrogen isn't the way forward. But there's a lot of backing for the hydrogen economy, isn't there?
There truly is, Justin. The fact is that when you look at Daimler, Mercedes-Benz, Honda, Toyota, Hyundai, all of these companies have made significant multi-hundred-million-dollar investments into hydrogen fuel cells. In my mind, my money is on the integration of hydrogen fuel cells and lithium battery technology. Hydrogen fuel cells continue to generate electricity and expand your range, and it eliminates the problem of slow charging recharging of your electric vehicle, and it allows you, in fact, to turn your electric vehicle into a mechanism that's generating electricity full time. That at some point you can use to power a variety of other things, for instance, your home. Mm-hmm. So there are huge investments being made by major players in the transportation industry in hydrogen fuel cell vehicles. There are also this week Kenilworth, one of the world's largest manufacturers of industrial trucks and transport, has announced a hydrogen fuel cell vehicle. Nikola has announced its hydrogen fuel cell vehicle. All of these players are operating in the industrial transport arena, where they can't take the time to spend 30 minutes to an hour to 3 hours recharging a vehicle. They need to be able to recharge as quickly as they could with diesel. And with our process, another incredibly important component is that we can actually provide hydrogen at a cost that is the equivalent or lower than diesel per mile usage. So when you look at places like TfL, Transport for London, making hydrogen bus acquisitions, their biggest concern is not really the upkeep of the buses. It's where do we get the hydrogen and how do we do that in a way that maintains our, that, that allows us to operate at the same price we had historically operated in a diesel environment. Well, for the first time, we can provide hydrogen at a price that is lower than, that is equal to or lower than diesel, and we can do that in an ongoing basis. We do that in a way that is carbon neutral, and in fact, when we replace that diesel, that process becomes carbon negative.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's get the news, Keith. So you've completed a pre-feed of the commercial DMG system. Explain what that means and the significance of that, please, Keith.
Yeah, so for the average investor, engineering acronyms are really a foreign language. In fact, for the average executive, engineering acronyms are a foreign language. And FEED is front-end engineering and design. The pre-FEED process is the process through which one goes to absolutely validate all of the technologies that you're going to be integrating into your ultimate system. It gives you an opportunity to acquire and assimilate all of the data that's necessary to finalize the engineering design and the actual look and feel of the processes that you're going to be utilizing for the final commercial unit. We've talked for months about the G3 being the mechanism by which we're finally achieving commercializability. And in fact, that's the case. The G3 is a process demonstrator that is absolutely provided us with data consistently and repeatably, which is really important, repeatable data that has proven to us that in a commercial environment, we can provide volumes of clean synthesis gas that can be cleaned up into pure hydrogen and or generate electricity in a substantially cleaner manner than has been allowed heretofore. So the pre-feed component now having been done, and this is a long process. People don't realize how much effort, how much time goes into this. We've had a team of engineers. This is not one or two guys. We've had a team of engineers going through every mechanism, every system and subsystem of our commercial design to validate that what we say is going to happen is indeed going to happen. So this now positions us, having completed and being able to put the stake in the ground saying we've completed the pre-feed, allows us now to move into the process called basic engineering or front-end engineering and design, which is effectively the same thing, which is bringing all of these pieces together, integrating them, checking the equations at the boundary layers, and ensuring that things are going to work as planned, and ensuring that the constructability, the commissioning, and the ongoing operation and maintenance of the facility is going to be well within the parameters that we had predicted. One of the really exciting things to be aware of is that we completed this pre-feed segment of the engineering exercise well within budget and well within the time frame we had set for ourselves. So all of the operation that we've been engaged in over the past number of months, in fact, from this time last year in Brisbane, Australia, to the time we brought the unit out to the UK and set it up for operation at the Thornton Science Park in Chester, we have been collecting and assimilating additional data, which has continued to inform our engineering design and allow us to enhance where appropriate, to modify where appropriate, but most importantly, to ensure that our commercial facility is going to be all that we've said it's going to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so where do you go from here, Keith? And I meant, I noticed you mentioned there that you've got two sites now. They've been shortlisted. So take us through that, please.
Yeah. We have since the beginning of the year, we have been We've been engaged in an MOU with Peel Environmental regarding their Protos facility up in Chester, which is a large-scale energy park that, frankly, being mentioned in the same breath with Peel and Protos is something that we're quite proud of. Peel has afforded us the opportunity to evaluate a number of other commercial sites that that they felt would ideally suit our needs. And the fact is that all five of them are ideal commercial sites for our needs. So we've decided from those five, we've selected two that we're going to be moving forward with aggressively in terms of finalizing that decision, both in terms of location, the access to various infrastructure components, access to both the grid and the gas grid, access to private wire sales, and access to feedstock supply contracts, all of which are integrated with each of these sites. So what this represents is really something that we've been waiting for, we've been looking for a number of months. As we have gone through literally dozens of possibilities, we've decided that being part of kind of the Northwest hydrogen hub and being part of the Northern Power Complex is where we want to put our initial facility. We feel that there's going to be significant visibility, there's significant synergy to being involved in that area geographically, and there's tremendous support throughout that area, both at a council level and city level, and then of course through the university facilities with University of Chester, the opportunities that has brought to the fore and allowed us to integrate with have just been tremendous.
Mm-hmm. And as far as you know, time frames are concerned, where do you put moving to these sites or checking out these sites, going further?
Sure.
How long will that take?
I would like to say that we're going to be able to make a final decision. I mean, part of this is a negotiation, and engaging in negotiations is always there are always unknowns associated with negotiations and how the other party is going to react. And we're dealing with a multifold negotiation, which is the combination of the feedstock supply, the power private line, power sale, coupled with the land itself. And so I would say that certainly within we hope that within the next couple of months, we're going to be able to say definitively which of these sites we're going to be operating on and where we're going to be breaking ground in the new year. Now, we're still on track for our intention is still to be breaking ground within the first or second quarter of next year for our facility, having planning and permitting well underway, and having completed all of the basic engineering and design for the commercial facility, really ready to begin integrating those Lego blocks that we talk about, the modular system for distributed modular gasification, bringing those together in a small footprint and standing them up to operate in a in the first facility of its kind in not only in the UK but in the world as far as we know.
Yeah, excellent stuff, Keith. Well, if anyone's listening right now and they're not following the story yet, but they think this sounds very exciting, but they haven't hit that follow button. Give them three reasons, Keith, why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox, please.
Well, yeah, the fact is that my belief is that you want to be following the trends that are absolutely in support of the powerhouse business model is the unleashing of the hydrogen economy. Finally, large companies are making significant commitments and significant investments into hydrogen as a road fuel. And when you look at the UK government looking at modifying its entire national gas grid to allow the injection of additional hydrogen in the pipeline and the injection of potential synthesis gas into the pipeline is a major trend that is unlocking. The other trend that's being unlocked is, unfortunately, is a bit of a negative trend, which is the fact that rubbish continues to grow. The expectation is that the amount of rubbish that is going to be generated by the human population is going to double over the next 20 years. And there have to be mechanisms by which we get rid of end-of-life components of those waste streams that currently have no viable mechanisms. You're looking at something in the neighborhood of 8 million tons, 8 to 12 million tons of plastics that are making their way into the ocean every year. You're looking at plastics outweighing the total weight of fish in the ocean by the year 2050. You're looking at massive gyres of plastics accumulating in the ocean the size of small countries. And these things are having a significant negative impact on our ecosystem. Our technology makes a difference. It makes a difference to the greenhouse gas emission equation. We generate no CO2 in the creation of our synthesis gas or the creation of our hydrogen. We have a substantial commitment to unleashing and unlocking the energy value of some of these products that are not recyclable, that are not recoverable or reusable. When you look at end-of-use tires, there are 70 million end-of-use tires that occur in the UK every year. That's one for every man, woman, and child in the UK. Something has to happen with those tires. We're one of the few technologies that can eliminate those tires without unwanted emissions, without significant pollution and smoke, and can unleash the energy value and turn that into a clean energy, turn that into a clean fuel, the output of which is water. And so by our system, our distributed modular gasification system, creating hydrogen, creating electricity in an environmentally responsible manner, we're going to change the way things are done in the eradication of waste and the diversion of waste from landfill, in the creation of distributed electricity, and in the creation of distributed hydrogen. So that's more than three reasons, but I've got to tell you, people should start following, and they should start following now.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I think it's a telling thing that on the latest episode of Blue Planet 2, Sir David Attenborough, they actually covered the oceans, and the first time they ever talked about plastic in the oceans, and they showed several upsetting pictures of the way, you know, it's impacting on a negative level wildlife in the oceans. So I think that's
exactly
how big the problem is. Keith, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll chat again very soon. Thank you very much.
Indeed we will. Thanks very much, Justin. Talk to you next time.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. You're right, John.
Yes, good morning. Yeah, all's good.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I'm just looking at my portfolio, and some of the stocks are, I mean, in the essential sort of commodity space at the moment, are rallying strongly. And I've noticed a lot of bullish, sort of articles coming out. And I'm reading your email as well about lithium and nickel and platinum. You know, it all seems to be going well. And what are you discussing at the moment, John? What's on your mind at the moment?
Well, there's a lot of momentum in the commodity markets and the junior mining sector right now. We've got the Mines and Money conference coming up next week, and also the Rival One-to-One conference on the Monday and Tuesday, where we will be at. And both of those conference events look like they're going to be very, very busy. Mm-hmm. Certainly at the One-to-One, we have a record number of institutional investor meetings lined up. There's a lot of companies there. They were sold out a while ago with over 70 junior companies presenting. So we're expecting to be very, very busy. And I think a lot of that's driven by just this sort of new mood of optimism within the mining sector.
Yeah. And I mean, is there a certain commodities that are hotter than others at the moment? Are there people mentioning like copper or nickel more than other, like lithium as well, more than other things?
Well, copper is a strong backstop. It's so important from an electric vehicle, electrification perspective. But of course, the market has broadened out into gaining interest in so many other metals that these electric vehicles are going to consume. And now we've got these new robots coming into the market in future years, but they are going to drive yet more demand in the rare earth metals, the neodymiums and lanthiums and those sorts of things. But more importantly, the big battery metal right now seems to be nickel. There's more nickel tonnage used in these battery packs than there is lithium or anything else, and that's very important. So the nickel price has completely turned around. There aren't that many nickel producers that you can buy in the junior space. And the big boys, the Rio Tintos and BHPs of this world, are also getting into that. They're now recognizing that they need to invest more in their nickel production to meet future demand.
I mean, I have got exposure in my portfolio to nickel. I think it's a cracking play, definitely. But also, like you say, copper, because that covers old and new. You know, it's both. You know, if we do have a global sort of, like at the moment, global growth that's happening, then any kind of construction, any kind of product, you know, carries copper, doesn't it? You know, copper wires and everything, and especially EVs as well. So, like, that's the backbone to the global economy, essentially, copper. But I've also got a bit of lithium now. But I'm also read with interest, and I don't know if you saw. I mean, it's in your email yesterday. But palladium and platinum, the price is going up. I think palladium's the best performing metal in the last year, I think. But platinum going up, and of course these are using catalytic converters. But I read a stat saying that there's going to be a massive deficit next year, apparently, and also that 80% of cars sold in 2025, I think, they were saying that. Will still have catalytic converters which use platinum, which I found very surprising, you know?
Well, I think that's relating a lot to hybrids. So though we would expect those catalytic converters to be smaller than many of the ones that we see in cars today, because hybrid vehicles generally have much smaller engines in them and therefore smaller exhausts and smaller catalysts. I think certainly with palladium, there was a lot of catching up for the price to do. And it doesn't take an awful lot of supply disruption in that market. It's a very tight market where consumers and producers are trade directly with each other. It's very closely aligned from a supply production perspective. And there's not a lot of slack to get taken up when demand starts to catch up. So although we expect the rollout of electric vehicles to be monumental and a huge change for the world, you are right in that it is not everybody's going to change their vehicle tomorrow. It is going to take the next 20, 30 years for it all to change. But be sure that I think in 20, 30 years' time, combustion engines will be seen as very old school and something that you wouldn't want to be driving, because from a pollution perspective.
Mm, yeah, excellent. So, and explain, people not aware, so Minds and Money start, and one-to-one, like you said, and that's what, to explain what happens there, for people who've not heard of these conferences, John, what is it all about?
Well, these conferences are where experts get together and speak to a wide and varied audience. They're speaking to the industry, they're speaking to the investors that register and go in. And that information is effectively given for free. You know, they are advising, they are advertising their wares. I will be there moderating some panels at the one-to-one with fund managers, adding their own insights and their own perspectives. So I think it's a great opportunity for investors actually to get access to first-class information, some fabulous experts, especially in the metals area, and to listen to what these guys have to say, and then also to meet some of the companies, because the companies are running around trying to get the institutions involved, trying to find more investors to trade their stock. And so they come along, these miners come in from all over the world. Sometimes they've been living in tents in Alaska or in deserts in Africa. And then they scrub up, sometimes not too well, and they come to London and they try and talk our financial language, which often requires a little bit of polishing. But you know, this is what it's all about. It's about finding these guys who are finding projects which are creating value going forwards.
Yeah, and I expect sentiment will be a bit more bullish this year than it's been maybe in the last few years. What do you think?
Undoubtedly, with the world on the verge of requiring so much more metal than it has over the last 20, 30 years, there is this new momentum within the marketplace, because consumers know that they've got to source new lithium, new rare earth metals, new speciality metals, tungsten, tantalum, titanium, you name it. They need to buy more of it, and the existing mines in the world aren't sufficient to continue to provide what they need.
Mm-hmm. Marvelous.
So we're seeing more traders, more consumers actually coming in and helping to fund these projects going forwards.
Yeah, excellent stuff. John, good to chat, fella, and chat again next week, hopefully.
Yeah, look forward to it.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at 5, Vesarion, VRS. At 4, Prospect Oil and Gas, PXOG. At 3, Kin Group, KIN. At 2, Premier African Minerals, PREM. And number 1 most followed company on Vox Markets had a crack in RNS. They suspended because they've taken over BP's some of their assets, I think. It's Serica Energy, SQZ. I think they're still suspended. Let me just check. 1 second. SQZ. SQZ there, Serica. Yes, it looks like. And North Sea projects were sold yesterday to New Generation Explorers. BP sold 3 fields to Serica Energy for up to £300 million. And they've got a 72 million market cap. Okay. Top 5 most liked RNSs are as follows. At 5, Powerhouse Energy Group. Obviously, just talked to Keith there about that. And that's the PHE completion of pre-feed commercial DMG system. At 4, Main Energy. Align Research Main Energy update note. At 3, MySquare. That's MYSQ. Registered users and reporting update. At 2, Harvest Minerals, HMI. Leach test results. And number 1 most liked RNS, actually, was late yesterday, came out. It's from Asia Met Resources. ARS, further high-grade zinc, lead, silver at BKZ deposit. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.